It is 398, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
2 weeks,
As
guys.
fucking
Holy
unbelievable as
shit.
that is.
It is. Yeah, it's intense. Okay. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Radio Free Nintendo. This is 398. Can't believe I'm saying that. I'm your host, Jonathan Metz, and with me, as always, are John Lindemann
It's my pleasure to be here, Johnny.
and Guillaume Veillette.
Howdy doodly.
And James Jones.
Stay tuned for this reaction next week when we get introduced and talk about how next week's 400.
Yeah. That's so weird. Anyway, we are so excited to be back with you guys. We had a really a hot episode last week. It got a lot of attention. We got tons of really positive comments on the interview with Dan Edelman and the discussion about, I guess, games media corruption after that. And has been some good, I think, very substantive discussion to come out of both sides of the episode. I do want to apologize in the sense that it was a very kind of issues oriented and maybe historical episode, but we didn't talk about actual video games as much as I like to do usually on the podcast. And we're going to fix that this week by jumping back pretty hard the other way. We've got a lot of new business, a lot of brand new games, exciting stuff to talk about, some really cool stuff for Nintendo platforms and Destiny, of course. Everybody has to talk about Destiny. And also in listener mail, we're going to be talking about the new 3DS and a couple other interesting things that our listeners have pointed out to us. So let's kick it off, guys, with Guillaume.
Yes, well, I've been playing right up until we recorded this. I've been playing Guacamelee on the Wii U, and it's a game I've wanted to play for a while. I actually own it on the PlayStation 3. I got it like I had gotten like a free credit from PSN, and I put it towards that. But then I wanted to play it co-op, and Karen didn't really want to because we had played at PAX East a part of the game where you're being chased by this giant dragon.
Oh,
And
yeah.
it's kind of a rough place to be dropped in, because you need to master certain special moves, right? You need to be able to jump and to do this kind of upward attack, a little bit like in Smash, to be able to climb certain surfaces. So,
Little sure you can, save move.
yeah, kind of. So she was very hesitant, but finally, we started it on the Wii U, and we just can't get enough of it. It's such a good game. Why
Yeah.
didn't anyone tell me? No one talked about Guacamelee. No, but seriously,
I
like,
had
it's
some of the
just.
same concerns, Guillaume, after we played that PAX East demo, because it was very action oriented, and I wasn't sure if I liked the idea of there being so much melee combat in the game.
Right? It's in the fucking name!
Well,
Sure, but
fair
like,
enough, but I was afraid it might be more of a beat 'em up, which I typically don't like that kind of game, but it is
Right.
actually very much kind of an action platformer, part Metroid, part Mega Man, part, I don't know, Street Fighter.
Sure. And so, yeah, like it is kind of a Metroid style game, and yes, the action, the combat is very different from what we're used to in a Metroid style game, but it really works, and I'm really surprised. I'm not having too much trouble with it so far. I'm not that far into the game, of course. I hear that it's kind of hair pulling, frustrating towards the end, but
Mostly just the bosses.
right. So I'm not there yet, but so far I'm coping pretty well. Karen is having a little bit more trouble because her, I think that a lot of people who played video games on the Wii, probably had played also on the NES, and so like they kind of skipped the whole thousands of buttons controllers period of video games. So right now that's kind of like it's kind of a new thing that we're exploring, right? Like there's so many buttons, they all do something different, and it was a little bit tough for her to get used to it at first, but no, just with a little bit of practice, now getting more comfortable with it, it's we're making good progress. And
I want, that makes me wonder actually if we could step off for a sec. What
sure.
is a good game to train someone to use a four button or a six button controller?
I really don't know. I've been thinking about that. I was like, well, should we go back and play Street Fighter 2? Like, is there a way?
Probably
like,
not. Just go get some arcade sticks. And
yeah, that game on a Super Nintendo controller.
And
that game.
You should be playing Third Strike
much.
Anyway. So.
Well, I was thinking like maybe Mario World, because you've got the, you know, the action button on Y and the jump on B, which is already different than NES because your whole hands are kind of rotated, you know, like
right.
Your thumb is pointing up rather than totally sideways. But that would let you get used to that. And then you don't really need to use X or A very often if ever. I don't think X is even used in that game. But
right.
But the spin jump is not a very frequent maneuver, and so you could kind of learn that, oh yeah, that's over here when on the rare occasion. But it doesn't take that much coordination, and the shoulder buttons don't really come into play that much either.
Right. And in Guacamelee, they're kind of triggers anyway. We've just unlocked the power... Is it Pollo Power? Power Pollo? Anyway, the chicken thing. And
you turn into a chicken. It's
exactly.
Kind of the morph ball of that game.
So it's just, you know, a press of the L button. And so, yeah, that's not too complicated. It's more like using the face buttons. But I think that any game can be a good training for you know, how many 8-button controllers. It's just that you have to keep at it. And because right now, like, it's less and less of an issue. And myself, I remember when I played Arkham Asylum, it had been a while since I had played a PlayStation 3 game, and then I jumped into that, and uses everything, and you have to press the sticks and all that stuff, and I was like, wow,
yeah.
They could have streamlined this a little bit.
Yeah, that game goes way overboard.
Yeah.
Like, Jesus Christ.
Says the guy in the credits.
Yeah, it does, though. I mean, even when I was playing it, I was like, oh my God. This uses it uses every single button and combos of those buttons.
Right.
Well, that game's in a tough spot because obviously the design already existed before Wii U launched. And so when they made that Wii U version, they had what was already a very complicated game that was made for very mature systems where people were really comfortable with the controllers. But now they're putting it on a brand new system with this big weird controller that no one's comfortable with yet. And so that game feels very unwieldy. As for a launch title, it's kind of shocking just how complicated the controls are. But on another system, you know, on a more mature system that's been out for a long time, it never seemed like a thing. You know, when I played those first two Batman games on 360, wasn't a big deal. But it definitely feels weird on Wii U, even if you have played the other ones.
Right. But I think, as John said, there's, you know, combinations of like the triggers and the punches.
Oh, yeah.
So it gets a little bit... a little bit much. But yeah, Guacamelee, we're getting more comfortable with it. There is a lot of combat. There's often, like, the game will stop you, put walls, and you can't leave this area before you defeat all these enemies. That gets a little bit repetitive, but the world that you explore is so vivid and so cool and so unlike anything I've ever seen. And just the quality of the graphics, like, I was really impressed by you run behind waterfalls, and it's just it's beautiful. There's beautiful art in this game. Like, there's a ton of pop culture references. I'm not really paying attention to those. Sometimes I notice something and like, oh, okay, Strong Bad, that's Strong Bad. But other than that, like, the dialogue is pretty good. It's pretty funny, but mostly the game is just fun, and yeah, we're enjoying it a lot. Yeah, and another game that I've been playing, and I don't know if anyone else has played it, but I've been playing Fez.
I have.
On the PlayStation 3. Oh, okay.
I have a little bit on the Vita.
I was really impressed with it. Again, like, I started playing it, and a couple of hours later, I realized, oh, wait, I should probably go to bed. It's exactly my type of game. It's this 2D platformer initially. Well, it always remains a 2D platformer, but the trick is that at some point you gain the ability to rotate the environment in three dimensions. So, you know, you might be in front of a house and you're, you know, jumping around, and then if you press one of the triggers, then the house rotates and you see what's next to it. And then you rotate again, you see what's behind it. And there's a lot of puzzles where it actually, what you see... The game explains that only what you see exists. So you might have like an ivy covered wall with a big gap in the middle. you know, and you're climbing the face of it. And so if you press the trigger and you make it turn sideways, then you're climbing on the side of the building, and where there was a gap, maybe all of a sudden, like the bottom and the top half are all of a sudden connected, and so you can keep climbing. It's a little bit hard to describe, but it really plays, like a lot of the puzzles play with the perception like that, and a jump that seemed impossible before because you rotated the screen, all of a sudden two platforms are closer together than they used to be, and so you can make the jump. And then you switch back your view again, and you've crossed this whole big chasm that you normally couldn't.
Yeah, you can kind of fill gaps by changing your perspective.
Exactly.
So
it's really cool. And that's kind of on the surface. That's what the game is. Because there's this whole other, not meta game, but there's these hidden puzzles that you can solve. And they really get in more esoteric areas. There's one room I remember where you see kind of this tuning fork, and I had no idea what was going on there, and I could feel the controller rumble, and I did not discover this by myself. I feel like an idiot, but I went on to an FAQ, and I read that the motors of the rumble were independently telling me what to do. Like, yeah, the right rumble and the left rumble were playing out a sequence, and if I switch the perspective with the triggers, you know, according to that sequence, then, you know, like a doodad would appear that I could collect.
That's cool.
That is cool, and it's not even like...
And Fez is full of that kind of thing.
Yeah, like it's got stuff where, you know, like there's binary code, or there's, I don't know, like there's codes that you have to crack, and it's really... stuff that I didn't really want to bother with. So I kind of cheated my way through those parts of the game. But really cool. And the game is beautiful. There's a lot of art that you see only once. Like, there's this cat playing in a village, and it's just at the beginning, and it's beautifully animated, you know, pixel art. And I was just amazed that, okay, like, they decided to make a cat. You only see it once, but it's just so beautiful and such attention to detail. And the game is really vast, and I'm really impressed with it. Like, I understand all of a sudden why it took years and years to come out. I'm very impressed.
Yeah, there's a lot of artistry put into it, and and there's actually a lot of game to Fez. It's kind of a big game, and it has a lot of layers to it. So
yeah, it doesn't seem so at first, but it just keeps opening up, and at some point it's overwhelming.
Yeah, at some point the game becomes the metagame, and it's not even about what you do in the game anymore at all. It's more about, you know, doing your research and trying to crack codes on pieces of paper and talk to other people and solve it together. And it kind of evolves out, you know, out of itself in that way as you play it. It's a really fascinating piece of work.
Yeah. One thing though, the map system is completely useless.
Yeah, it's
and
bad.
So I'm at a point where the game is a chore to traverse because you don't really gain new abilities to help you cross terrain faster. It's not a Metroid style game, and so there's not really that many shortcuts that open up. And coupled with the poor map system, I just gave up. Like, I basically stopped at when you see the credits, which is not quite the end of the game as far as I understand it. There's a whole, like, you know, there's an extra quest, and I don't think I'm going to bother with that. But no, really, really cool.
Yeah, you've seen most of the cool stuff in it. And I mean, I pretty much agree with everything you said, Guillaume, and I would add that the soundtrack is absolutely superb. And it makes some of the sort of what might otherwise seem kind of goofy cutscenes that don't really make any sense. They're just kind of like, you know, these like color orgasms on the screen and just things flashing and looking all psychedelic. But the way the sound production accompanies that stuff actually kind of gives it this real gravity and like a very weird, somber sci-fi kind of feel to the game that I was not expecting when I first downloaded it. So, anyway, I think Fez is actually a strong candidate to come to Wii U probably next year because
you think so?
Yeah, the publishers of the game Polytron have been porting it to a lot of different systems. And, you know, Sony obviously got their hands on it, and it went out as a PlayStation Plus game last month. But it's also been on Steam. And I think there's actually, you know, like Guacamelee, I think there's a good chance that there might be a version in the works for Wii U, especially as that platform, you know, builds up a little bit more. And they think, hey, you know, there's actually a lot of like classic Nintendo DNA built into Fez, and that might be a demographic that we should try to accommodate once it makes sense to do so from a business case. So I think that might be happening next year.
Right. I really want Nintendo to manage to capture these games that have eluded them, like Fez and Minecraft. I mean, we couldn't ask for specific games to, you know, Dan's specific games last week, and that's a shame. But, I really would want to know exactly why Fez is on Vita and not on 3DS, not on Wii U. You know, there's got to be some good reasons. But it's really a shame, because whatever you think about Phil Fish, I know he's kind of, people love to hate him. He's made some remarks about Japanese games that may or may not have been taken out of context, but there's like a freaking Zelda poster in the starting room of Fez. Like the guy definitely loves the classics and loved at least in the past tense Nintendo games. And
he's like the Quentin Tarantino of video games. Like, I probably couldn't stand to be in the same room as him, but I
probably
think
just
he's
tell
brilliant.
You to kill yourself. So
I think he's really brilliant, and I want to see everything that he does.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, but I don't have to like him as a person. It doesn't matter, you know? And, he has some attitude problems, I would say, but I don't care. I'm not ever going to meet him, so it doesn't really matter to me. And it shouldn't matter to anybody else either.
Yeah, I blocked him on Twitter, and I'm playing his game. And that's the way it should be.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just glad that I had a chance to play this, because I kind of almost avoided it a bit because of all the hype surrounding it and all of that kind of bullshit around it. But now that all of that is just kind of in the past, and I'm just able to enjoy the game on its own, it's actually really, really good. Mm-hmm. So
it's definitely worth a playthrough. Let's move on to James to hear about a game that I know everyone has been waiting a very long time to
talk about. Unless you're in Europe, then you've not been waiting at all. As for whatever reason, when I decided that, you know, a good time to start Persona 4 would be 2 weeks before Leighton versus Wright comes out. That was a smart decision. but Leighton versus Wright did come out, and after reaching a spot where I could set Persona 4 down and come back later, I went and flipped that game open. I started Monday, and I'm about 13 hours in, based on how much time I played today, probably about an hour. Mm-hmm. I'll start with what the game is. So obviously it's the Leighton, Professor Leighton, Phoenix Wright crossover they announced what feels like 3 years ago now. That may actually be accurate. It may be about 3 years.
It was almost,
So, that game came out in Europe half a year ago, probably more than that, and we're just finally getting it now in North America. What the game basically is it's, imagine you take Phoenix Wright game, and you take out the investigation segments. So it's sort of the inverse of what happened with the investigation series, where you took out the court and just mixed it in with the investigation. So you take out the investigation series, and then you take a Leighton game and substitute the Ace Attorney investigation series with the Leighton's investigation mechanic. Because ultimately, every Leighton game is essentially a mystery story where you're investigating the mystery by going through the world, interacting with the people in it, and doing their math homework.
Right.
So effectively, they've just substituted the Ace Attorney internal investigations with the Professor Leighton ones. And effectively, it works okay, because ultimately, you're still doing the same thing. You're still investigating a mystery. And it's just, once you've investigated that mystery some, shit gets super real, and now you have to go to court and deal with it. Basically, the premise of the story is both Leighton and Wright were sucked into this magical book that contains a world that is where this one person, the storyteller, writes, becomes reality in that world. This world is kind of like this weird fantasy version of a medieval construct. And in it, there are witches, and these witches effectively kill people. So being caught, caught being a witch means you are instantly executed. And in incredibly graphic means, they show these executions in the game. It's very, I will say at first, very disconcerting when it happens. But essentially, you're investigating what these witches really are, because ultimately, this friend you made that led you being sucked into these books is on accusal for being a witch, and you're constantly trying to figure out what's really going on here. So you have this construct of these characters who come from, you know, a world of science and reason dealing with this sort of medieval witch hunt. But it also turns out this medieval witch hunt's core principles are actually true. So there's a lot of this going along where you're just sitting there going, what am I, this is super weird and difficult to comprehend. I mean, functionally, this game works really well because ultimately it's, you know, it is what it is. These are two series that work well together simply because they have mechanics that complement each other.
So do you, well, I want to ask about that. Do you feel that in both cases, the two pieces of the game are presented here as well as they are in their respective games? I mean, this is basically level 5 making a Phoenix Wright, isn't it?
So no, actually, it's
was it actually co-developed?
It is co-developed, and actually Shu Takumi, I believe, is the lead writer. And he's the person who wrote Ace Attorneys 1, 2, 3, and 4. Mm-hmm. So, and he also is responsible for the beautiful menagerie of crazy that is Ghost Trick.
Does the Leighton part feel more like a Phoenix Wright game?
No, because it is co-developed.
No.
This very much feels like a co-developed game. We're, in fact, on the Leighton stuff, they aren't experimenting in the slightest. This is very hardcore Leighton gameplay. The maps feel like, I mean, even the characters that you encounter during the gameplay feel like Leighton characters. They look like Leighton characters. I mean, because effectively they are. The map, the icons they use, even to represent the Ace Attorney characters of Phoenix and Maya, they look like they belong there when you're in that mode. It's a very weird experience of you're watching the styles that these two series carry with them sort of blend. And as you're doing stuff, you can see things pop up on top of each other. A really good example is the little sound effect that the games make. Both these games have the little sound effect when people are talking. And when an Ace Attorney character is talking, they make the noise from that series. But when other characters are talking, they make the noise from the Leighton series. It's just like a little tiny touch where you're like, all right, you know what? Yeah, that's good. I appreciate this. It's, you know, there's lots of little things where you're like, yeah, that comes from a Leighton game. That comes from an Ace Attorney game. You can even kind of feel it in the music when music will sort of hit a beat and kind of flip over to the other one stylistically. It's a very elegantly executed mashup in the detail that went into saying, okay, this really needs to hit a note for a Leighton game. I mean, ultimately, because you're dealing with things like magic and just complete bullshittery, you're deeply rooted in Leighton territory. I mean, granted, spirit channeling is part of the Ace Attorney franchise, but generally speaking, you know,
they're not quite as wacky.
Yeah,
I mean, in terms of, you know, Leighton turning a slot machine into a machine gun.
Well, I mean, Leighton had a game about the Loch Ness Monster. And
yeah,
I mean, it's out there. This game is, these games will go to places. The entire Azran arc is basically just magic. And that they just touched it up with, no, they're super technically advanced. That's all. They just have laser robots made of stone. But so you get this mashup that more or less works because you can write these characters flexibly enough and the worlds that they come from are compatible enough that they blend well together. So you get these interactions and they feel right for the character. And, you know, this is the kind of situation that you may find yourself in ultimately when you have these two franchises together. I think they do experiment more with the Ace Attorney stuff. The court proceedings are altered slightly in how they handle witnesses as opposed to a prolonged period of going through grilling one witness with a menagerie of evidence you have available to you. They've introduced this mechanic where, because this is a imperfect court system, it's a kangaroo court. They're effectively looking for the opportunity to immolate witches. They're not really trying to give a fair trial. They just throw all the witnesses up there at one time. They tell a confusing story and you kind of have to figure out how one plays against the other. And you have a relatively limited set of evidence because there's no forensics. This is because of when this world is set in. So it's much more about listening to what they say and pressing versus is the normal games where you're just trying to nail people with contradiction line after line after line. In a way that kind of feels like it makes the game easier. It does make the game easier. I mean, both of these, as a conceit for the fact that fans of one franchise may be coming into this game having not experienced the other, both of them feel easier than the source material. The court cases are incredibly easy to get through, at least from my standpoint. And the puzzles that I've encountered so far aren't, you know, they're giving 40 Picarot puzzles for ones that would be 25 in a normal late game. So there's a certain amount of, you know, they've toned down both franchises in order to make it more approachable. I will say one place that I enjoy the fact they're blending is that you could still find hint coins in the world, but you can then use them in court, which I've done a couple of times just to kind of see how the hell are they going to make a hint coin usable. And what it is you'll hit it and it'll show up on the screen until you get to the person that you need to grill because you're bouncing between these witnesses and it'll say like, press, and you press it and that's it. It's not going to tell you anything else, but it gives you like, okay, this is where you need to start digging from. I thought that was a neat little touch. Also, the fact that you get Picarots depending on how well you did in the court case at the end is kind of an amusing little touch. Except the game's fairly dark thematically. I'm a little disappointed with the localization because even though they sat on it for almost 7 months, they didn't do anything to relocalize it for North American markets, including spelling. So it's very much a raw European localization of the game, which really makes the fact they waited this long completely incalculably stupid. I mean, it wouldn't have been that difficult. So you are dealing with like Luke's European voice actor, if that bothers you. I think he's too nasally, but besides that, whatever. It's just like, it feels like, why did they send this game so long if they weren't even going to take the extra use out? It's a weird thing that they did there. But besides that, I mean, this game is what it is. It is, if you enjoy Leighton and or Phoenix Wright, well, guess what? This game is Leighton and Phoenix Wright. I mean, it is exactly what it is. And, you know, I stayed up. So I got stuck in a court case. Stuck. I was relishing it. But I got in a court case last night around 11 p.m. And I figured, well, I'll just go till the first save point in the court case. Because, you know, they do split it up. The investigation, court, investigation, court, investigation, court. But once it's not like the Ace Attorney games where you'll go to court and you go back and investigate more and you go to court again. It's very much you're in court and it's going to run through to the end. Because, again, this court's not trying to get justice. It's just trying to execute people. So there's not really going to be, all right, let's go back and do more investigation. It's just like, we're not sure. Kill her anyway. So.
Wow.
I mean, for reference, they execute people by dropping them into fire and you see it. So, I mean, it was pretty jarring. They lovingly animated a sequence where a alleged witch is burned alive. It's like, whoa, game. Whoa.
Wow.
Usually, people die all the time in Phoenix Wright games, but usually it'll be like you'll hear the gunshot and then it'll pan to the body with the bullet hole on it.
Right. It's always you see it after the fact.
Yeah.
There's also blood around, but yeah, you don't see like the bullet going through the brain.
Yeah. You don't see someone get dropped into a fire pit and immolated. No. Right.
So is this game rated M like the last Ace Attorney?
I want to say it's T. I don't have it in front of me right now. I'm a little bit surprised if it is. I could check real quick.
Yeah. I've also been playing the game, but really not at this pace. In fact, the beginning, well, I think, is shocking. Kind of a slog.
I know, right?
No, but I mean, like, the first Leighton, I actually finished it in a weekend. I was really into it.
That's pretty intense.
Some subsequent Leightons I finished also pretty quickly. But this one, I feel like, well, first in my game, like, Leighton and Wright are not even aware of each other at this point.
Oh, yeah, you're still really, fairly early, yeah.
Yeah, I finish a prologue, and I'm, like, the first chapter of the investigation phase, the first chapter. I find the game a little bit too wordy. It's just, like, they can't believe that they're inside a book. Like, oh, I think we're in Labyrinthia. Where's Labyrinthia? I think that we went inside this book. This book? This book. You know, everything that's written down happens? Yeah, everything that this guy writes down happens. We're in Labyrinthia? You know, it's just, come on, like, get over it.
Get over being sucked inside a book. Yeah, just fucking deal with it, kids. God.
Come on, after all the time.
After all the crap that they've seen, it's like watching, like, a season 9 episode of The X-Files where, you know, like, someone still disbelieves that there could be aliens.
Well,
like,
keep in mind, usually in a Leighton game, the answer is that somebody was trying to deceive somebody else. Or it's that they're in a cave full of gas.
Right. No, but to be fair, Professor Layton is usually the first one to say, okay, let's roll with it and see what happens. He right. just, he as a character, he does not dwell on how weird things just got. He's like, I'll figure it out later.
So, yes, this is rated T for teen. With the description of mild violence. I said, whoa! Did they not give this scene to the ESRB? Yeah. What the fuck?
Brutal immolation.
Yeah.
Yes. My favorite form of mild violence.
Yep.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's I will say that, you know, it does start slowly. Part of it is because it, just like with the gameplay puzzles, it does feel like they have to kind of reintroduce some of these characters, because it is possible that somebody comes in just being a hardcore Ace Attorney fan who's never played a Layton game.
That's right. Fair.
And so there is some exposition where they're like, this is Maya. But what's weird is, like, for Maya's example, they don't mention she's a spirit channeler until super late. It's like, why didn't she mention that earlier? And they're just like, whatever, doesn't matter. It's fine. Everything's great. It's like, that's like the first thing you would mention about her. If somebody introduced you, oh, this person channels spirits, that wouldn't be something they tell you like 3 days after you meet them. That'd be like bullet point number one.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, she talks to ghosts. Whoa, what?
BT dubs.
It's like, that wouldn't come late. And Layton's just like, all right, whatever, cool.
But in terms of all those weird character introductions, I wonder if that's something that could actually be better in a sequel. And I don't know if this game really did all that great in Japan or how it's going to do everywhere else. But, you know, if they do end up making a sequel to the crossover, then you could really skip all those formalities and jump right into it. And I wonder if in that case, maybe they might take some of this criticism on the chin about you know, the fact that it seems like the gameplay as well as the characters just don't interact with each other very much.
See, I think the gameplay interacts well enough. I think ultimately it took out the part of the Ace Attorney games people don't like, which is the walking around and investigating. It's a much more guided experience ultimately.
See, I like those parts.
I enjoy them too, but a lot of people just didn't like them. I think they work well together from that standpoint. I think ultimately it's a good stand-in for the text adventure stuff that you encounter. I would say that the writing gets a lot better. The case I'm on right now is Maya's been accused of being a witch because Maya gets arrested pretty much with the same frequency that people have lunch. So, yeah. I mean, the fact that she's currently on trial is not shocking to anyone who knows anything about that franchise.
She just looks guilty.
I don't know what it is. Like, it's just constant. She's just victim complex all over the place.
Can't catch a break.
So I will say that right now, actually, as I was playing this, I think it was Famitsu spread on Daigakuten Saiban, which is also written by Takumi, came out. And
quick refresher. That's the ancient, not ancient, but like 18th or 19th century Japan version of Ace Attorney.
Right. It's discussing the introduction of a legal system versus just, I am the lord of this domain. I think you're guilty. Right. You're dead.
So that's where you go from samurai to, oh, we actually have courts now.
We have a legal system.
So yeah, that seems culturally interesting.
So
they just introduced Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah. So what they introduced is he goes.
That's cool.
He introduces his first. He does his first case in Japan, and ultimately they decide they need to send him abroad to do legal study. And that's not particularly surprising because Japanese scholars were sent abroad constantly during that era to learn things. So sending somebody abroad to learn, hey, how should we have a court? I mean, that seems really fundamental. But if your country's never had them, you probably need to send someone to someone who has to figure the fuck out. It's because it's kind of a weird concept when you really think about it. But so it's kind of – I get a lot of vibes because they sent him to London where this game starts. And they introduced this investigating character who's not a sidekick. He is a separate character who is moving through the world and is, you know, making observations and providing providing – information and analysis through quick wit, i.e. Professor Layton, who's not an adversary. He's not your sidekick, and he's not an adversary. He is a character who is investigating in parallel with you and ultimately providing you back information with his own sidekick in a way that it's like, wow, this game has some weird parallels to the game he wrote just before this.
It's like its own crossover built in with Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah, it's like he's on a kick now, isn't he?
That seems to really signal to me that they're kind of positioning this for maybe an international release. I mean,
oh yeah, absolutely.
Think about the setting, and you think, oh, this is one of those games that'll never leave Japan. But then you bring in Sherlock Holmes and you have the main character going abroad and going, you know, that starts to make a lot more sense.
Well, and you start introducing more, you know, universalist themes about, you know, leaving your cultural, you know, safe spot and going and traveling and mm-hmm. exploring and growing as a person. So you also introduce cultural themes like 8-year-old Dr. Watson MD, but whatever. Because this series...
An 8-year-old girl playing...
This series doesn't stop. No matter what you try to make it do, this series don't stop for nobody.
It is so crazy.
Can't stop, won't stop. I'm
James, on that note, do you think there might be a case based on Rashomon?
Oh, so...
Like, that would be kind of appropriate,
wouldn't
it?
It would be. God, that would be a super weird case, too. That would be so good.
Yeah, that'd be actually really cool if they made a video game version of Rashomon.
If you've never seen the movie depiction of Rashomon... It's fucking insane. In the best,
it's a pretty incredible
in the
movie.
Best way.
You know, a lot of people think one of the best Japanese films of all time.
It's
so certainly check it out.
From the standpoint of you could almost approach it as like a whodunit film, but it's really so much better than that.
It's like Perry Mason, but way better.
yes, wow. It is way better than
but
Perry Mason.
Super Japanese.
Yeah, I'm really enjoying this game. The timing, you know, because I just finished playing Investigations 2 not that long ago. I'm playing this now. They announced I played Layton, not the one before Investigations 2. They announced this more details on the spin-off game that's coming.
You're gonna play the trilogy when it comes out.
Yeah, I am.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, I'm weirdly looking forward to it. It's so I mean, I say that, but like, I have a friend who's a huge Layton fan, and I just said, just start with these games. They got all three dirt cheap. They started on one, they got through that. They hit that last case in two, which is a masterpiece. And like every day, I was getting a text like, "Who the fuck killed people in this case?" And I'm like, "Just hold up, you'll get there eventually." And when they got to the end, I just got this. I'm done. I'm like, "Did you enjoy it? That was too much. I'm overwhelmed." And I'm like, "Good, that's good. Game three is even crazier. Have fun." And they're like, mm-hmm. they're like, "Oh my god!" Like, I just living vicariously, somebody reacting to each case, and just remember, you know, I'm excited. This has been a good experience. I'm really happy this game's finally freaking out. I think they did a really good job. I think the character models look amazing, and the world looks amazing. I think
better than the Professor Layton 3DS games.
Oh yeah. Significant. So
is it as good at or better than the Ace Attorney 5?
I think Ace Attorney 5 probably cribbed the technology from this game ultimately for the characters.
Okay.
I mean, there's very real parallel there. I think the art direction, though, the design of a lot of these characters that aren't, you know, non-specific, you know, the new characters they created, Espella, the girl that you're, you know, trying to defend, looks amazing. You know, the art, it's not a technical thing, it's an artistic thing. It did a really good job capturing this kind of storybook imagery. At the same time, it's really amazing to see her and then cut to blank face Layton right afterwards with her just almost intensely detailed, you know, features, and then you get Layton .. smiley face. And it's just, it's just so much to take in that it's just beautiful. And I'm just,
But the idea of actually playing like such a beautiful version of Professor Layton is kind of appealing, because I think the two 3DS Layton games, really not very good looking.
No.
I mean, compared to what the system can do, and especially if you played Ace Attorney 5, there's no comparison.
Well, and even when you look at what they did on the DS, which wasn't 2D, but artistically it was very, you know, even though Layton himself, like I said, is .. curve. Ultimately, you know, they rendered him very, you know, lovingly. The characters in that mm-hmm. game were very, you know, detailed and, you know, very, they reminded me a lot of like French animation, you know?
Yeah.
But in the 3DS games, they just seemed polygonal and
yeah,
bland.
When you make those out of polygons, it doesn't, they, I think they need to add more detail.
But you know what? They did
because
it
doesn't translate. Because
these 3D
well.
Characters look like Layton characters. And the ones you encounter in the world, and it works. So maybe, I mean, granted, that was the last Layton game as they describe it, but that they're not going to leave that franchise alone. I mean, they're going to do something with it eventually.
Yeah.
They just probably don't know what yet.
Well, I mean, it makes sense for Professor Layton to go back in time and hang out with Sherlock Holmes.
Sure.
So maybe Sherlock Holmes as like a new weird kind of crossover background character.
I mean, he effectively is Sherlock Holmes. I mean, he's They were aware of what they were creating when they made him.
Oh, certainly.
Yeah. I mean, yes. He is Holmes.
I think Leighton versus Holmes would be kind of a cool idea. All right, so that's plenty of talk about Phoenix Wright, Professor Layton, but I know that's been a topic for a long time, and there's a lot of anticipation. So moving on, let's talk about an action game that I've been playing, and James, I know you have as well, Azure Striker Gunvolt. It came out on 3DS a couple weeks ago.
The day that before Layton versus Wright came out.
Yeah, when it rains, it pours, for James at least. For me, this is like one of the first new 3DS games that's come out in a while that I was really interested in. And it's made by Inti Creates, the guys who made Mega Man Zero and the collection for that, Mega Man 9 and 10. And they're working now on Mighty No. 9. And they
what's
made this...
surprising is that this has like no resemblance at all to a Mega Man or Mega Man X game.
Yes, sure.
Azure Striker, these guys... the Blue Bummer, yeah. I don't know. Yeah.
No, right. I mean, they knew what they were doing, yes.
Yes. So, I mean, look, as I've said about Metroid, I'll say about Mega Man, if Capcom won't make it, somebody has to. And clearly that's what Mighty No. 9 is going for. And Gunvolt, less directly, I think, but it owes a ton of heritage, of course, to Mega Man. But, you know, it's very different in a lot of ways also. Now, it looks, I would say, similar to like the 32-bit Mega Man X games. You know,
actually,
like
I would
4,
say
5,
it looks
6.
Like Mega Man Zero franchise.
Well, yeah. I mean, it has a lot of that too, of course. So, you know, if you've played any of those, you kind of get a feel for what this looks like, what it sounds like, how it feels and controls. But the actual mechanics of the game are different. You might have heard about this, but you don't directly just shoot enemies to kill them. You fire bolts at them, and then you have to hit the R trigger to create an electrical field that then zaps them with electricity, but also like makes you fall more slowly, and it acts as a shield against certain things. So this electrical power that you have is used for a lot of puzzles, a lot of platforming, a lot of kind of complicated combat situations, especially with bosses. And, you know, I think they needed to do something different. Mighty No. 9 is yet another way of kind of twisting the formula and making it feel original to some extent. But with Gunvolt, I feel like the combat comes across as being too indirect. You know, I mean, the thing about Mega Man, it's a very basic game. You know, I mean, they try to snazz it up with all these special weapons that you may or may not ever really use very much. But at its core, Mega Man is about walking, jumping, and shooting. It's three actions that you do throughout the entire game. It's very basic. And it works because it's tight, you know, and they get creative around that basic formula. With Gunvolt, the process of killing an enemy is much more complex, and you end up, because of the level designs, you're kind of charging this thing, but then you have to refill the meter afterward by like double tapping down, and a lot of times what happens is you shoot enemies with a bolt, and then once you hit the electricity, you kind of dodge and run away, because now it's on fire and forget. You know, like you're just holding the button down and the enemies are dying, but it takes several seconds to kill even a very basic enemy. So it always feels like they're like damage sponges, you know, because it's such a gradual process of destroying
an
enemy.
You can shoot an enemy with multiple bolts, and that makes them go down way faster, though. I'm not having too much trouble with it so far. I'm not very far into the game. I finished like three levels, but, The game really does encourage you to shoot multiple bolts, activate the electrical field, and it doesn't have to be one and then the other. You can kind of do both at the same time. Like, I often find myself activating the electrical field so that I'm in the air long enough to shoot at least three bolts into an enemy. And as I'm doing that, it's also taking a lot of damage. So there are ways to speed up the action of the game. And eventually you're going to want to do that a lot, because the game kind of rates you on how fast you complete these levels.
Sure. Yes, all of that is true, although there's some caveats to it. So it depends on the bolt gun that you have equipped, and there are lots of them, and they have different characteristics, and some of them don't let you do very many simultaneous bolts. So if you choose one that only lets you do one or two, it may have other advantages that, you know, may or may not be useful, but it will make the enemies take longer to kill. Other thing is, as you get deeper in the game, and I'm in the second half, although James can speak much more to the late game stuff, the enemies do take longer to kill. They just straight up take, they just have more health, and your weapon doesn't seem to get upgraded in terms of power as quickly as their endurance goes up. So it's, to me, it starts to feel like they get more and more spongy. And then the game becomes very heavily leveraged on bosses, because a lot of the small enemies, especially when you replay levels, the small enemies don't take a whole lot. I mean, you can skip them, you can blast through them really quickly. They're a lot weaker than you, and so you can kind of roll through that stuff pretty quickly, but the bosses are where you'll spend the most of your time, and they just take a long time to wear down. I fought one yesterday that splits into two, and you have to kill both pieces at the same time, and yeah. I had the perfect bolt gun to do that, and I knew exactly what it wanted me to do, and it wasn't hard. I didn't die on it. It just took forever to get it to line up correctly, and that boss battle, I probably spent about 10 minutes on it. And they just like, it kept being like slightly off, and then they would revive each other, and then I have to go through the whole thing again. And one of the annoying things, especially about the bosses, is that a lot of them have some kind of dodge or spin move that will make them lose your tracking cursor. So then basically they spit out the bolts that you shot them with, and now you have to redo it. And it's hard to see that has happened a lot of times, because you're dodging shots and you've got this electrical field around you and whatever. And so there's just not a real clear indication that you're no longer damaging them. And right. That has really annoyed me on quite a few of these boss battles, because, you know, the whole idea is you're supposed to be able to shoot them and then do some dodging and climbing the walls or whatever, and kind of let the electricity do its work until the next time that you need to do something. But they don't tell you when, hey, you need to turn around and shoot this guy again. You know, it's just that some of the communication with this stuff doesn't work. And I don't know if it's because the game is too busy visually, or if it's maybe a color coding thing. I'm not sure, but there's something about the user interface that makes it feel a little bit wonky to me. So I'm enjoying it, but I wish it had a little more immediacy to the action. And I don't mean that it's slow paced. I mean that it feels like a lot of what you're doing is very indirect, and in a very fast paced action game it's not my preference, I guess.
So, I mean, I could speak to the bosses in particular, because at this point I've gone through all of them. What's weird about the game is you don't gain power through defeating bosses. Mostly what you do is you just level up. And so some of these bosses that early were just damage sponges, when you go through the inevitable boss rush in these games at the end, they're peons. But in the late game, there are bosses where it's not just a matter of knowing that, or, you know, stopping or knowing that they've lost lock on, because there is an indicator around the character telling you you could see how much you've locked on to them, you know, how many tiers of lock on you have at this point.
Yeah, but it's hard to keep up with that, especially if there's two of the bosses jumping around. You can see how that becomes a challenge to keep up with all that.
Yeah, that happens a couple times. Obviously, you fight them again during the boss rush.
Yeah, and sometimes, you know, some of them have multiple lock-on points because they're very large.
Yep.
So
yep.
Same thing applies there, right? You might lose one of the lock-ons, but it's not immediately apparent that's
right.
Happened.
So there's a late-game boss that the only way you can lock on to them is to disengage their primary attack, which requires you to use the static field at the right moment to sort of knock away their shield, and then you can lock on to them, and then you can let loose. So while once you're attached to them, once you're laying in and you've sort of bought this gear that makes it so you have more charge time on your shot and you've leveled up quite a bit at that point, once you've got a lock, you're doing a ton of damage. But it's the whole fight becomes getting that lock. The last boss and then the real last boss are even more egregious on that point. Getting the lock is ultimately the challenge. Getting through their attacks and gaining, you know, the opportunity to damage them is where the game comes in. So a lot of the game's last boss, I spent time just dodging, and it was just a significant amount of time spent dodging and waiting for the opportunity to attack. And once you get that, then that's actually where the least action is happening during the fight. Because ultimately, you're more or less just standing there and just dumping on him. And then eventually he breaks that cycle and you have to go through the whole process again of just avoiding his attacks, understanding the pattern. So in a lot of ways, it's sort of the old style pattern combat from a Mega Man game, except you're not shooting. I mean, you can if you want to. You're not really doing anything. So it's a weird, it's sort of a weird way of the lack of direct immediacy that you have in the game because of this mechanic is sort of manifesting itself in the boss battle. Whereas in a Mega Man game, you'd be dodging and shooting. This game, you're dodge, shoot, dump, and then start dodging again. It does mean some of the boss battles feel incredibly drawn out, because if you miss your opportunity, you have to wait for it again. And the other thing that's worth noting is that health drops in this game aren't super prevalent. So, but you do have a skill that heals you, and it recharges. It's got a recharge right. window. It's also got like an MP kind of set that also recharges. So like,
now, of course, it's not at all clear that's what it does, by the way.
Well, I mean, you use it.
I guess it might say on the menu.
It does say on the menu.
The symbol is just useless.
The other, you unlock more of these as you go. There's one you get late. I think it's like around 30. That is just from a big ass energy sword, and that wipes out about a third of every boss's health in one shot. Which is cool if you can connect with it. That was the biggest. I mean, I used it when I was about to die on the last boss. I'm not gonna go through this crap again, and just let her rip, and got lucky. But I mean, there is. I think the bosses in this game have some of them are really good. I think there's some bosses that are really competently put together bosses that I enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
I think some of them have issues, and I think the same thing applies to some of the levels. Some of the levels are good. Some of the levels have issues. I think there's actually kind of a remarkable lack of middle ground there. I think there's a lot of levels that work, you know, at that next level. When you talk about Mega Man games, like, all right, most of the levels are functional. There's a couple that really work at this sort of next tier, and then there are some that are kind of, I think you get a lot of that are at the next tier, and a lot that you're kind of just like, well, whatever, it happened, I'm through it.
Yeah.
So
they can't all be Bubble Man.
It's a very weird game in that respect.
And what my biggest problem is so far with it is kind of the structure that they gave it. They tried to make it addictive, I guess, like with the leveling up, but also there's loot. And so a lot of the weapons that you gain, you're actually assembling together from the loot that you get. And a lot of the loot that you get is from achievements, like finish this stage in 7 minutes.
Like challenges. You have to explicitly say, I want to do this.
Right, so you have to select them beforehand. You can only select 3 at a time, and any given stage might have like 8 or 9 challenges in them. So you're going to have to at least, you know, you'll have to go through the stage several times. And not only that, but like you'll have, okay, finish the stage in 7 minutes, and you might complete it in like 3, and you're like, wow, I'm awesome. So you claim your reward for that quest, and then, hey, guess what? No, do it in less than 4 minutes.
And
you're like, this could have been avoided.
Sure.
You know, like this kind of problem.
Ultimately, I didn't. I'll tell you now, you don't need to run many of those challenges. I had all the power-ups I wanted, and I think I only ever did one set of challenges just to see what it was like.
Okay.
Once you get there's a power-up that gives you a triple jump. Once you get that, all bets are off. so I will say one.
Do you like it, James? I mean, overall,
I liked it. I think
we've sounded kind of negative on it, but actually, I mean, I am enjoying it. It's just, it doesn't quite have the simple addictive appeal that I like from this kind of game. It feels like maybe more like the original Mega Man Zero versus where that series really picked up the pace.
Yeah, and I actually like the original Mega Man Zero quite a lot. I
like it too, but I think 2 and 3 are way better because they're kind of faster and there's less walking around. And you know what I mean?
I had this
feels a little too bloated something about it.
I had to learn this game. You know, I had to kind of learn to love it for what it was. And there are issues with it. I think the localization is pretty atrocious. And in fact,
I think it's kind of entertaining, at least.
So
the game is super anime in presentation, but the localization, you know, it has to deal with a lot of these kind of anime terms, like these made up organizations, and, you know, people they have special words for the people with special powers and then their enemies. And they all have these crazy anime names. But the writing is actually kind of a little more conventional, I guess.
I don't know. It's more like a Nickelodeon cartoon writing. I mean, it's like, what up, doofus? It's like, what are you doing? Stop it.
There is some of that, yeah, but then a lot of it I think is funny and on purpose, and you know, and
And I'll also say that the other thing that they didn't do is apparently there's like dialogue sequences with bosses. They just said, fuck it, too hard to translate, and just cut them out of the English version.
No kidding.
Yep. Huh. It was like spoken word stuff, and there was no text on screen, so they just said, eh.
Oh, that's too bad. That probably was not 8-4's decision, I'm going to guess.
No.
That might have been a budgetary
thing. No, and
then
they said it was, we wanted to get the game out at the same time as we got it out in Japan. It's like, well, then just put text on the screen then. Because, yeah. I mean, the character, there is some voice in this game. It is all in Japanese, but there is some, and they never tell you what they're saying, but there is some. I enjoy it. I actually was looking forward to this a little bit more than Mighty No. 9, based on what I've seen of Mighty No. 9 lately. That game has not looked good in some of the trailers recently. There's been some weird slowdown stuff going on. I think the fact they use 3D art has taken away from the game visually a little bit.
I'm excited about that. I think it will set it apart. Right?
Maybe.
It'll make it look a little more high production, potentially, if they do it well. And it harkens back to a game that I kind of like, despite itself, that Mega Man Network Transmission game on GameCube. Yeah, it's a really bizarre little experiment, but there are aspects of it that I quite enjoy. So I'm curious to see them do. And there was also, what was it, Mega Man X8 on PS2?
Yeah, that game is just garbage.
So again, there haven't been a lot of good polygonal, side-scrolling action games like that. I think Contra Neo or whatever for PS2 also kind of maybe not that amazing. So what I would love is for Inafune to kind of redeem those games,
these 2D
polygonal side-scrolling
don't
games.
I just didn't look good recently when they showed a trailer of it. It looked slow and just didn't seem quite right. So I was actually really looking forward to this game because Inacrates this is what they do. And this is their game, not their component part on somebody else's game. And it worked once I learned what this game was. Ultimately, that's what I had to do. I had to learn what this game was. And once I did that, it was working. So I'm happy with it in that respect. It's rough in some spots. There's some things they should have fixed, but it is what it is.
All right. So Gunvolt also comes with a kind of a bonus game, Mighty Gunvolt, but we'll talk about that next week. How about that? Because I know James hasn't had a whole lot of time to check that out yet. So let's move on to John, who might be asleep, but we're going to wake him up and get him to talk about Destiny.
No, I'm still here, buddy. Talking about Destiny, I got to actually play. It was a nice surprise. Got to play with Johnny Metz and Billy Berghammer last night, which was pretty cool. Yeah. So if you don't know what Destiny is all about, you've probably been under a rock somewhere hiding. After playing the beta, it was interesting just to see kind of what's been changed. Not a whole lot. It was actually pretty advanced. It was in pretty good shape. The server's been really stable. Everything's been pretty good so far. I haven't had any disconnects or anything, which is, of course, the first thing that I look for in any of these games, especially something that's so MMO-like. That pretty much prides itself in being, having a lot of people online at one time, even more so than any other first-person shooter because just of the way it is. So, it's a great game. It looks really good. I know Johnny especially likes the moonscapes. You can go to the moon. You can go to Earth.
It's beautiful, man.
Yeah.
For a lot of the reasons that I like Xenoblade, although this doesn't have the giant creatures roaming around, unfortunately, which is very magical. It doesn't have that Jurassic Park effect, but the environments are crazy detailed and really imaginative and just really lovely. And the skyboxes, I mean, Billy and I were talking about the skyboxes last night. So that's a term if you don't know. I mean, that just means like the artwork that they use to represent the sky in these big open expansive environments.
Yeah.
They look like paintings. They're insanely beautiful.
Yeah, and they also the thing is they also have moving elements on them too, which you typically you can tell in a lot of games where it's just like one big bitmap.
Hell,
right?
Sometimes you can see the lines on the skybox in games.
Yeah, right. And
wrap it back into itself.
Yeah, so it's sort of one of those kind of hallmarks of, a game where they kind of went that extra mile to put the extra details into the skybox because typically usually it's just kind of throwaway stuff.
Because usually you're
really
not looking
up. Yeah, it doesn't really affect much. So it really, really impressive. And I mean, it really does that whole, the kind of sci-fi space element. It really, really does it well. Like, it looks like I see myself, next time I travel to the moon, this is probably what it's going to look like. It's,
Absolutely. And I, hey, as someone who fully intends to step on the moon in my lifetime, I can tell you, I've seen a lot of video and a lot of photos of the moon, and I've met people who walked on it, and I think it's a pretty damn realistic, you know, expression of it, other than the giant like gash in the moon that causes these crazy ravines and like weird caverns that go down into the core. I mean, that's all, you know, sci-fi stuff, but
yeah,
it's really impressive. And it's covered in this expansive moon base that looks like it's been there for 100 years. It's, and then, you know, then you go see the alien city over there and these people, whether the Fallen or the Hive.
The Hive Mind.
Yeah, they've sort of taken over the moon, and you go and get into their weird, like, underground palace. It's just so crazy. Like, in terms of the kind of art style and the sort of things that they're showing, that part actually kind of reminded me of, like, Conduit 2, except it looks a thousand Lincoln. Times better.
Yeah. I mean, that's pretty Lincoln, much
what you're telling me.
That's pretty much everything in this game. It doesn't – if you just describe the game to somebody, there isn't really much that's been done that hasn't been done before.
It's a lot like Halo. I mean, it really is.
It's a lot like Halo
and Borderlands. It's not anything like amazingly innovative, but it's just so polished and done well and so fun and beautiful.
Yeah, and there's a lot to explore. I mean, I'm really surprised at how much I enjoy just exploring and just fucking around. I mean, just walking off somewhere. You know, you walk off somewhere, and you know, granted, I haven't played Borderlands at all, so I'm sure, you know, somebody said, oh, somebody kind of dismissed this as Halo Lands. So I don't really know. I haven't played Borderlands to really compare, but just, you know, walking off somewhere and just you find a cave, and inside the cave there's a chest that you can open and get some loot and stuff like that. Really, really cool.
Like, if we are going to make the Borderlands comparison, is there like a ton more guns than you can pick up?
No, it's actually...
like, it's just super annoying to try to sort through them.
It's cut back so much on that.
Does it steal?
Yeah.
Are the enemies infernal bullet sponges?
No, not at all.
No, not really.
A lot of enemies will go down in one or two hits. Even, I mean, if you're at the same level, you know, and you're not likely to encounter anything that's way lower or way higher than you. Most missions, they keep them pretty close. I mean, I've beat Borderlands. I've played all of Borderlands and a good bit of Borderlands 2, and this blows them away. It is a much better game. The shooting is better. The graphics are not even in the same conversation. And it is actually more fun to explore. Like, if you guys remember like playing Metroid Prime for the first time and walking around and looking at all the crazy environments and how beautiful and how like over-designed every single room has become in that game, that's what Destiny feels like when you walk around. It's like,
I just want to look
at everything. It's so pretty.
I was walking around. You know, it was funny because I actually last night when we were playing, there's this one cave area that we were in, and you know, Johnny got lost in this one area, and then I went to find him, and I got lost in the same area. But as I was coming back to you guys, I thought, you know what, this is probably, if somebody asked me to describe what I would like, you know, a next gen Metroid Prime game to be, it would probably be something close to this.
I mean, maybe certainly not, it would look a lot like it. I don't know if it would play much like this, but it would. Yeah. This is exactly what I would want it to look like.
Yeah, it really does that kind of, you are out in space on some foreign planet by yourself, maybe a couple of buddies. It does think it's really, really well done. In terms of, you know, guns and stuff like that, they don't really go overboard with that. But the key thing is, and I think this is really smart, is you can break guns down anywhere you want. Like you can break them down into like the currency. And you can just get that as soon as you pick it up.
Anytime. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So you just, it's, you know, you just hold down your button and that thing's gone and you instantly have currency in your wallet. So you never have any inventory.
Stay organized and it makes it easier to find the guns that you actually care about, because there's no reason to keep guns that you don't want to use. You know, you can immediately get rid of them and trade them in. So that has helped me a lot. So I never feel like in Borderlands, it's like, well, I've got 18 guns. Am I going to sit here for 5 minutes and like go through all of them and figure out which one to equip? And Destiny is just much cleaner than that. It's much more streamlined. It's more like in Mass Effect, where you might have two or three guns that you're kind of flipping between, but it's nothing that's hard to manage at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's really quick to switch guns. Now, the one thing I did, I did hop into the Crucible a couple of times. Got my ass handed to me. That's the PvP part of the game. With that, you really have to be careful about what guns you take in there with you and what guns you equip. Because I have a shotgun that you actually have to charge up completely useless in PvP because, you know, a shotgun, it's, if someone sneaks up on you, you want to turn around and blast them, not sit there and charge up your gun. It hits them hard, but stuff like that. So, you know, Crucible, but again, that's, I mean, that's kind of an entire game mode unto itself, and it's something that, you know, I mean, I've heard it takes about 16 hours to get through the, you know, the campaign part of it right now. And then after that, you would, I'm assuming you would move on to the PvP stuff, but they're also going to be releasing raids, the larger content. And, you know, Johnny and, Billy and I are going to be doing one of the strikes, which is kind of the 5-man instance content. But yeah, it's really good. I mean, and I mean, if you aren't really into first person shooters, I don't think that this is too far out of your ballpark because I feel like it's restrained. I feel like they don't, and Johnny, maybe you can speak to this, but I don't feel like it's too overly complex for somebody who isn't really into first-person shooters.
They've kind of, I agree with that, you know? Especially if you're not scared of RPG stuff, because it's not an RPG, but it has enough RPG-type features, you know? I mean, it's along the lines of maybe a Mass Effect without all the dialogue trees, but it has that level of you're sort of managing, you've got different powers. You know, some enemies are kind of weaker to different kinds of abilities, and you're leveling up, and you've got a little bit of equipment to manage, but not too much. And there's a lot of story. So, I mean, if you can play through Mass Effect, you could play through this. You don't have to be like a hardcore Halo, Call of Duty player to go through this, especially as a single player game or, you know, teaming up with one or two buddies online. It doesn't seem that intimidating. I agree with that for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of selectable difficulty, and because it's an RPG, you can also just replay missions and get more experience and sort of grind a little bit if you really need to. So, it seems really well balanced so far. I'm liking it a whole lot. I'm excited to play more of it and see what it's all about. But, you know, I think the early concerns or maybe hopes that this is going to be like a real MMO, that doesn't seem the case. I mean, it seems more like it's like a quadruple A first person shooter that has a lot of online stuff, including a lot of cool like co-op stuff that's easy to use, but it's not nearly as complex and not nearly as long as an MMO. So and that's good news for me. I'm already way too involved with an MMO that I don't have time to play. So I don't need another one.
Yeah.
But I like Destiny a lot so far.
Yeah, that's good. The one thing I wish they would improve, and there's been some complaints online about this, is that make it a bit more friendlier for people that want to kind of do drop-in, drop-out play, especially in the areas where you can't respawn.
Yeah.
There's really no checkpoints. So once you get into one of those areas where you're sort of locked in, you have to play through the whole chunk of content, some of which can be really long because – even though maybe the area isn't too big, you're fighting all these enemies that take a long time to chop down. I mean, you have to sit there and kind of tactically, you know, slice them down over time.
Waves
kind of
and
thing.
Waves and waves. I mean, a lot of these encounters feel like horde mode, like in a Gears of War, you know?
Yep.
So it's like you get backed up into a corner and you have to defend something for a certain amount of time, and they're just going to load in waves and waves of enemies, and you and your buddies have to work together and kind of come up with some kind of, you know, paintball worthy strategy.
Yeah.
You know, you get over, you take that side and I'll get this side or whatever. But those are really fun, and they're just like really seamlessly kind of built into the mission designs.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm sure they'll change that over time, you know, have it like in World of Warcraft, where if you do a raid, you'll complete one wing of the raid and then you can exit out and it'll lock you to that, and you can start off where you can start where you left off. So I'm sure they'll do that.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll see. A lot to come from Destiny. They're still making it and still rolling it out. So we shall see. But for now, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we've got your listener mail, including our first opportunity to talk about the new 3DS. So stick around.
Here's a quick look at the best original content at our website, now playing at NintendoWorldReport.com.
Week, we have a review, Tesla Grad on Wii U by Curtis Bonds. If you're looking for a beautiful but tough-as-nails platformer, Curtis lets us know that Tesla Grad probably has you covered. If you're looking for a Kirby-level challenge, this probably isn't for you. And check out his review to find out why.
Dirty Kirby players.
Dirty Kirby players scrubbing out all the games for us. Us hardcore.
But speaking of Kirby...
Yeah, speaking of Kirby, we have a review of Kirby Fighters Deluxe 3DS by Neo Monahan. A Kirby fighting game, you say? On the 3DS, you say? I know it's crazy, but hey, so's the concept of a pink floating blob that consumes its enemies and gains their powers for his own nefarious uses. Neo weighs in on whether or not this is as good as a standalone eShop title, or should have just been left in Kirby Triple Deluxe. Additionally, this week, we have a preview. Bayonetta Hands-On Preview Number 3 by Don Kootman. In our continuing coverage of this highly anticipated game, Don talks about bonus Nintendo costumes and the online mode known as Tax Climax. By the way, does it surprise anybody that the word climax was used in conjunction with this game? No? Let's move on.
Thank you, Game Show James.
You're welcome.
All right. We have a preview of Smash Brothers, of the Smash Brothers 3DS demo. It's a hands-on preview.
We have a preview of the demo.
Yeah, it's a preview of the preview.
Christ.
By Neil Ronahan. Neil just bought a Japanese 3DS, and he puts it to darn good use playing a Smash Brothers demo currently on the Japanese eShop. Find out what characters are playable and how they feel emotionally and physically.
Yeah, what's their deep motivation?
In this advanced scouting report.
What makes them David Cage in the morning?
What makes them tick? All right. And we have a review mini of a classic, Metroid Zero Mission for the Wii U VC by Danny Bivens. Ah, Danny. So young. So innocent. I look back fondly on the days before I first played Metroid Zero Mission. Then, my life changed forever. For good or ill. Perhaps I'll never know. Danny, however... plays it for the first time and is a bit more concrete in his thoughts on this GBA classic, and you can read them right here. There's supposed to kind of be like a hyperlink there, but it's I'm
yeah.
Saying
it. Just click yeah. your podcast. Just click it.
Yeah, just click it right now. Click my voice. All right.
Yep.
Okay, and we also have impressions of Theatrhythm, Final Fantasy Curtain Call, because I love the word Theatrhythm.
Yep.
By Neil Ronahan. If you've been looking forward to this unique Square Enix music game, Neil gives you his initial thoughts after some time with the retail version, which
what
just
kind of
came
thoughts
out.
Are they, John?
They're fantastic and splendid.
Oh, beautiful.
Hey,
and amazing.
It's beautiful. Everything's beautiful here at Nintendo World Report.
BeautifulWorldReport.com. You can read more about this at NintendoWorldReport.beautiful.
Welcome back to the show, everyone. It is time for listener mail. The address, as always, is rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. And the first email this week, I bet you can guess what it's about. Guillaume's going to read that one.
Matt writes, "Hey, guys. Love you. Love your show. Do you think Nintendo would ever do remote play on the new 3DS from the Wii U, similar to what you can do on PS Vita from the PS4? Controller parity with the Wii U, faster processor, and faster Wi-Fi in the new 3DS might be indicators. I'd like to hear what you guys think."
Real quick pause here and say that they've not released, to my knowledge, outside of the development community, what the stats on the new hardware are.
Yes, typical.
You know, we have some vague understanding of what they are.
Yeah. It's as powerful as a Wii.
Well, it's,
whatever,
it's,
that doesn't mean anything. It's
yeah,
on a totally
it's,
different architecture.
Yeah, I mean, well, yes and no.
They're hard to compare.
Well, yeah. It can run Wii games.
Yeah, it's... Yeah, we'll just say it is a boost, a significant boost in power. But I'm not necessarily sure there's any reason for them to want to do remote play on this device, primarily because you're dealing with, you know, something that doesn't really have the form factor to do... you know, these kinds of games. And ultimately, they have a system that's built around, hey, here's a device you can hold in your hands to play games on it.
I think the form factor actually is the one thing it does have going for it. I mean, it does have the button. It even has the gamepad touchscreen and the motion control built in and everything, and the camera. I mean, pretty much anything you can do with a gamepad, you could do on a 3DS if it's fast enough to run all that and if the Wi-Fi is actually so much better. The main problem here is the screen resolution is just completely incompatible. And that's why it won't...
I'm just imagining playing, I don't know, Guacamelee on that thing, and you couldn't do it. You couldn't read what's on the screen.
You don't really have the touchscreen because you only have it on a 6x9 resolution screen. You don't have it on the full widescreen. So you'd have right. you'd have to do some kind of weird touchscreen mapping that probably wouldn't
letter boxing or yeah, exactly.
So
again, its screen resolution kind of bites them in the ass. But you know, certainly they're going for more. It seems like they're going for more console style games. I don't know if they think that's what people want on 3DS, but you know, with the Xenoblade remake from Wii. I don't know to what level that remake is a remake or is it just a port? It seems to be the same game essentially, so same content, but are they gonna, you know, try to add new features or is it just more of a straight conversion?
I don't, so to be clear, I don't have inside information on this particular point, mm-hmm. but multiple people I've spoken to, including people who actually have seen the stats for the system, have speculated that this is moving towards architecture. It's not that's more similar to the architecture they've been using in their home console since the GameCube. Which would mean they're doing some kind of wizardry to make 3DS stuff work on it. But if that's the case, then a port does become a more viable option. If it's, you know, still completely separate ARM-based architecture, you know, that weird, like, here's two different processors that are different speeds, because that's how we've been doing it since the DS. Screw it. That's what we're going to do. And we've been using ARM processors since like the Game Boy on our handhelds. Then yeah, you're gonna have to do some kind of weird redevelopment of the game from the ground up. But if that speculation's accurate, then a port becomes a much more viable option. Certainly, you could probably port GameCube games to it. I mean, in terms of power, we're definitely talking in that territory.
Well, look, the gulf between GameCube and Wii is modest at best.
Sure,
like, I've seen the Wii specification, and I can tell you that it literally says. It's pretty much the GameCube with like 20 to 25% extra power.
And
it's just not that big of a difference.
So and the other thing that memory is been boosted on this guy as well, and that's a big deal because that's something the 3DS had a deficiency of from as my conversation. So there is more memory now.
I wonder if developers were asking for this stuff, you know, cuz I think it's odd in the sense that you know, it is clearly not like a major new shift in their handheld strategy in terms of branding or anything like that. I mean, they're certainly positioning it as a DSi, like it's kind of a boosted
right.
version of something that you might already own.
Yep.
But it's weird to me in the sense that I don't know that more power was really what anyone needed for 3DS. I mean, 3DS has a number of deficiencies that we could point to and say, well, if you're going to make a new one, maybe fix this, fix that. Processing speed and RAM doesn't really seem like an obvious thing to upgrade to me. That was the most surprising aspect of everything with this new system.
Yeah. I mean, maybe if they're trying to flesh out the, you know, use ports to flesh out the software library.
So this is the hot take I'm going to take on this one, which means it's probably almost certainly wrong.
Yeah, like when the news broke of the new 3DS, I was I overslept, and then I saw the reactions on Twitter, and one of them was, if they can get Unity running on this thing, then
ding!
You know, exactly. But yes. I was like, I was sleepy, and I was like, oh, what, Unity? Oh, that's awesome. And then I realized, oh.
So no, this to me, this is.
You realize it was all a dream.
To me, this is a step that allows them to be more compatible with getting games on the eShop. And ultimately, that is probably what their hope is to get more things on the eShop and people buying stuff on the eShop because that's where the scratch comes in.
Yeah.
The Skrilla?
Yeah. The Dinero.
Okay.
So I will say right now, I called it.
called what? Unity?
No, that they were going to release a new 3DS instead of a new system.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm the best.
Who didn't call it?
You guys didn't call it, actually.
Wait, hold on.
Yeah.
I predicted something called the 3DX, which was even less ambitious than what we got.
How do you think this is less ambitious?
Because my concept for 3DX was basically just, it's like made of metal and glass, but it does pretty much the same thing. I think that the new 3DS is much more ambitious in that it does change the internal chips and it has a improved 3D effect, although that's, you know, very nebulous as to what that really means and how much that affects
its angle
practical
of, its
sense.
Angle of viewing. It's just like when they went to the XL and you could view it better from more angle.
I think the XL has a worse viewing angle.
Really?
Of course, it's also a much larger screen
that
you hold, you hold differently because it's heavier and it's bigger and the screen is bigger. And there's a lot of things that go into that. But I think the XL 3D angle is actually worse than the original.
Yeah. What to me, what's weird about this thing more than anything is that they've got this, their second analog control monster that they've put on there. That's just, it's such a weird tack on that it feels, I mean, there was space for another circle pad on there if you really wanted to squeeze it on.
Yeah.
Especially on the XL. They could have definitely done it on that one. That I'm wondering, like, was this thing a late add as a contrition for ports? Would make
sense. It certainly standardizes the control options, you know, with most console controllers.
How does that thing feel, though, is my concern.
Like, yeah. Are they trying to get Steam games on here?
How much fidelity do you have controlling it is the question.
Right, and of course, with Xenoblade, you don't need much. I mean, that game doesn't even have direct camera control on the Wii. So,
no, it doesn't.
Well, no,
it does when you use it.
If you're on the
controller.
Pro controller,
yeah. If you're on the Pro,
it does.
Yes, yeah. Because I played it with the Pro, and you do have the ability to shift the camera around.
But it's certainly not necessary.
No, it's a good feature to have in that game though, because it lets you look around the world.
Oh, certainly. Yep. Yeah, I agree with that. And I think, hey, Xenoblade in 3D, that might look pretty damn good.
I'm curious how well that game's going to run, to say the least. I mean, it didn't run flawlessly on the Wii. There were moments where the game started to go like,
I mean, it certainly, we could say that the idea of, and I'm assuming all of this will come out in other territories in 2015. We're pretty sure that it will. But the idea of them pushing Xenoblade as, hey, this game was actually good. You guys should maybe, I bet you've heard about it. Maybe now you can play it on the new system. I think the fact that that's an 80 to 100 hour long game is really nice to be able to do that on a handheld. For a lot of people, that's more practical.
Think about it this way. You can save in that game anywhere. You can warp to anywhere you need to be.
Yeah.
You could just do stuff real quick and get out. I mean, there's...
Yeah. Makes me wonder about battery life, though.
So, they did mention battery life, if I recall correctly. But I don't remember what they said. It was like they improved it? I can't remember. It was more or less
the same as the XL, I think.
Yes, they already improved the battery with the XL. So I guess they're going to try to keep
that
standard with more power, which means they probably did have to improve the battery, but it comes out as kind of a wash.
It may not come out, it may not be effectively any better. I mean, for me, the main thing with the 3DS, and I would love if they come out and say something about this later, but for me, it's the standby battery that's really bad. I mean, when I'm playing it, I feel like it lasts plenty long enough. But the problem is if I play it some and then I leave it off the charger for a day and then I come back and I play it some more, it runs out so fast because it's doing Street Pass all the time and it's doing all this other stuff. And that's a lot of that is probably just like better wireless chips, you know, like better power management at the operating system level. There's probably a lot of ways that they could improve that if they really focused on it.
I just turn my wireless off when I'm at home. I just let it go.
That's not a bad strategy, actually. I'm afraid I would leave it off if I, you know, took it out.
You do have to train yourself to turn it back on before you leave.
Right, yeah. But it's led to me kind of wanting to leave it plugged in all the time when I'm not playing it. And I don't even have a dock anymore. I don't have a charging station, so I just have to, you know, find the cord. But I would love if they – because to me, the amount of time that you actually get from just playing a game is sufficient. It lasts 4 to 6 hours or whatever. I need a break after that long, so I'll charge it. But it's when you're traveling with it that it really sucks.
Yeah, I'm glad I haven't bought a 3DS replacement yet. But I don't necessarily know that I'm going to buy this one. I'm curious what they ultimately do with it in terms of gameplay library.
It's a big question mark for me because I'm playing Xenoblade right now. You could not pick a worse title to entice me with. I'm not going to want to play it again right away.
I already own Xenoblade. I already owned it twice. I own a European version and a North American version. So, I mean, I'm set on Xenoblades. Thank you very much.
But, I mean, look, Xenoblade is a game that lives, that looms much larger in the public consciousness than it does on the sales charts.
Right.
That game never sold very much, even when it did better than expected, apparently, in the U.S., but never was a big seller in any territory, and everybody knows about it. Everybody knows someone who's played it and loves it. So I think it's a great choice to launch
and
this
And it's
system.
The kind of game that you could show, this is running on a handle, and people go, whoa, really? That game's huge.
Yeah, that looks like a Vita game.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So... Here's the the take that I'm getting out of this, though, which makes me think that maybe this really is about more download stuff, is my understanding, and I'm this is from secondhand translations that I got from someone else, is that that thing has its own eShop on top of the regular 3DS eShop. And they talked about it in the context of, like, the skins you can get that skin the UI with, like, Nintendo themed stuff.
It would also have games that you can't play on the regular 3DS. So it makes sense that it would have a branch off version of the eShop that with some exclusive items in it.
My thought was it's just going to be an eShop that there's stuff that's exclusive for it in the regular eShop, not they're going to build it its own separate thing that you can access in you get to the real eShop on its own separately as well. It's weird. But they're obviously going to fill that eShop with content. Otherwise, they wouldn't fucking make it. So, and they don't mean skins. This isn't going to be like the year and a half tyranny of the DSiWare Mario clocks. I mean, there's going to be stuff. So I assume that, you know, their mind is around, you know, third party independent publishers being able to put their games, you know, into the shop.
Please. It could also lead to things like N64 Virtual Console, GameCube Virtual Console.
Sure.
On a handheld?
I mean,
that'd be pretty sweet. It's got basically got most of the controls you need. Doesn't have the analog triggers, but as we've discussed, not many games really use
those. To that end though, but it does have two triggers on each side. So
it does, yeah.
So it takes care of the Z button.
Which I think obviously it's based on the Circle Pad Pro, but also much like the Circle Pad Pro. I think it's really a kind of a token gesture to Monster Hunter. And
sure, absolutely.
In Japan, that's worthwhile. I mean, there's people. There's a lot of hardcore Monster Hunter people, and they will buy this for Monster Hunter.
The Capcom Monhan 4 Ultimate stream that was the next day, they were using new 3DSs, which is what which is what they call it in Japan, the new 3DS.
Yeah, man, they've got to get a better name.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
It's terrible.
It's not a good name. Yeah, it's confusing.
Stick new on everything. Bland. That's the Nintendo naming strategy. On everything.
Really hope they go with something.
No, they'll give a different name in the West.
It's not too late for 3DX.
I don't know.
They said this. I think they explicitly said that kind of information is coming on Western releases later, including the names. I'm pretty sure they know that ain't going to fly in the West.
I hope so, man.
I will say that.
I wouldn't put anything past Nintendo with branding.
I will say that the takeaway for me on what you can do with this thing is, let's say they can get all those major indie games that are coming out right now on the system. What the fuck does the Vita have left? I mean, seriously, what's left? Sony's basically said, we're done. I mean, independent games are what that system's bread and butter is right now.
Yeah, and really super Japanesey RPGs.
Yeah, well, yeah.
And that stuff's going to continue coming out to Vita, though.
Yeah.
I mean, there's clearly enough people who have Vitas and who will download that stuff.
As its own thing, like, that's what sets it apart right now. That's fairly...
Sure, yeah. I mean, Nintendo could go for parity. Now, do I believe that Nintendo will be as good at courting those games as Sony has been? No, not even close.
Absolutely not. But no. that is...
But I mean, there'll be people like Dan Adelman and his successors who will try, but Sony has, like, a very active... outward facing, you know, very popular team of people. I mean, a lot of people from the formerly of the games media whose names you might know. So, those people, you know, the indie game developers know them and want to work with them. And Sony's been very smart about the way they've handled that. So, but I would love for Nintendo to try to be competitive. That would only be good for us. And, so I hope that you're right. And I think it makes sense if Nintendo does kind of position this as kind of the more hardcore, you know, people who buy every new thing, you know, they're looking for like a more advanced system. It makes sense that they would focus more on download stuff because they're the people who are more likely to actually check out that eShop and buy things.
So, and it is my understanding that this is not a stopgap device like the DSi.
I thought it would be until I found out about the new processor and everything. And now I'm like,
This is.
Okay, this is actually a disappointment to me because when are we going to get a high resolution handheld from Nintendo?
Thank you. Well, maybe it is a stopgap in the sense that, as James alluded to earlier, maybe this kind of is the first step into the unified architecture that Nintendo's talked about in terms of, you know, if the handheld and the console have similar processing architectures, then they can use much more similar development strategies on them.
Because Nintendo is fucking in love with those Broadway processors. I mean, they've...
Yeah,
they love them. Sticking them they in sure everything. Do.
They've been around since GameCube, basically the same lineage, and they're very low power consumption, so it makes sense that they might be good. I mean, they're similar to ARM. They're not probably as efficient as ARM processors, but you know they're close, and so maybe it makes sense that they start moving in that direction. Maybe this is not a stopgap, but like a kind of intergenerational thing in the sense that it still supports the old 3DS stuff, but it gives them that bridge to the new way of doing things. And so maybe the next handheld after this is the one that actually really upgrades the display and the inputs and everything and is actually the more revolutionary looking thing. So they can kind of have it both ways if they play it right.
That's kind of an informed speculation about the processor being in that lineage, but this is Nintendo's multi-year device.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't the DSi, it's a year and a half and then guess what, new system's out. They have a medium to long term strategy for this thing.
Well, let's talk appeal to us personally. What do you guys think? Are you interested in this? Are you waiting to hear more, or do you feel like you're?
So for me, I don't
need such a thing.
I'm actually excited if this thing has games coming out for it, because I have an original launch day 3DS. It is a device that has issues, and they are known issues. It's getting to the point where its battery doesn't hold a charge as long as it used to.
Yeah, you're due.
Yeah, so for me, in 2015, by the time this thing comes out, my biggest decision is, A, does it look like they're going to support this thing for real? And if that's the case, then do I go with the XL or do I stick with the form factor I know? But it's not really a question. If I feel like they're going to support this thing, it's not really a question of if.
Mm-hmm.
Right, it really depends on the library. Xenoblade, that's not going to do it. I'm going to wait for something that's a little bit more appealing.
You're currently playing Xenoblade on the Wii, so
exactly. Right.
I think it shows it shows a commitment, because I mean it can't be cheap to put Xenoblade on that device.
Yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean I'm kind of in the same boat. I mean I can just sit back and watch and see how this thing does. I mean I'm the same as James. I still have the old. I guess I didn't buy it at launch, but the launch day 3DS, and it's fine. I mean, I've already had it replaced once, so what I'm playing is pretty much brand new. So I'm in no hurry to replace it, but for something that's more powerful with possibly a better game library, I'll wind up buying one, I'm sure, at some point.
I get a feeling I'm going to be able to wait for a sale before getting my hands on one.
A sale. For me, it's I'm in a kind of an odd position because I've had. I'm on my third 3DS, my second XL, and my XL is now a little less than a year old. It's actually, on the day we're recording, it's been a year since the flood, since the fated episode 350 and all the craziness that happened there and the rescued audio file and whatnot. So my XL is in good shape. I use it quite a bit. It doesn't feel antiquated to me, although I have issues with it. I'm not totally convinced that this next version is actually going to fix all of my issues with the XL. If I got one, I'd probably go for the smaller one, actually, because I'm kind of curious. I feel like it has a larger screen than the original 3DS, which is a big deal. But with all the hardware improvements, I'm thinking that form factor, I kind of yearn for it sometimes to have something a little bit easier to hold, easier to take with me. But for me, I kind of feel like I need to see these games, because I'm not totally convinced they're going to release games anytime soon for this thing that really are going to sell it to me. And if that's the case, maybe I can wait for the second, the revision of the new 3DS.
Oh boy, renew 3DS.
I mean, look, on the Nintendo releases new handheld hardware about every year and a half, so it can't be that much longer before even another improved version of this thing. And then maybe by then there's enough games on it that I care about. But that's totally up to Nintendo and their sometimes very prolific software output for these systems. So I'm very curious to see how it goes down. Also, of course, in the West, we don't know what these things cost. We don't know when they're coming out. And Nintendo of America really hasn't said a peep about it. So I'm very curious to see how they roll it out, how they present it. I have a feeling they're going to wait till after the holidays to really seriously.
Yeah, I mean they're full up in Smash Brothers conversation right now. They don't want any. They're very much staying on message right now.
Yeah, I mean, they're releasing a lot of new colors and designs of the current 3DS and 3DS XL. They just showed that NES version. Not totally sure I like it.
It looks really stupid. Why is the gamepad on the top and not on the gamepad?
I don't know, but at least they're doing cool things. They're doing one for a Persona Q, which is really cool. So, you know, they're clearly supporting that thing. I think there's going to be some good deals on the 2DS this holiday season, and they're going to continue to try to milk that stuff because they probably wouldn't be able to get enough hardware really to make holiday work for a product launch.
No.
So it makes more sense to launch that thing early next year and where they can focus on it.
And you need software too. You can't launch that thing with just
I know people are like, well, I mean, no one's going to buy a 3DS this holiday season because they'll know this new one's out. And it's like, no. If NOA just like stays shut tight, doesn't say a single word about it, 99% of America will have no friggin' clue that there's another version coming out in 2015.
And the people who won't know are the ones who are going to care less anyway.
Also the people who do know
already own 3DSs.
They probably own a 3DS and don't need one this holiday season.
Right. The only reason they'd buy one is they really want that Persona Q one.
So it's a win-win for Nintendo. So I think they'll definitely wait to talk about this until December 26th at least.
I think probably that little media buzz they always do like middle of January,
mm-hmm.
like around the 15th where they start talking again.
Yeah. So anyway, to wrap up Matt's question that kicked us off here, and thank you, Matt, for giving us an avenue to launch into the new 3DS. Probably not any kind of Wii U compatibility with this thing, at least in the way that you're thinking. But maybe the next handheld after that. I mean, maybe this is the stepping stone towards being able to do that kind of communication. So we shall see. For now, we're going to move on to the next email, and James is reading this one for us.
Sure. So, Chris writes, "We've seen reports that the new 3DS will have exclusive games. What do you think about the possibility of enhancing existing 3DS games? An example would be porting Kid Icarus Uprising to utilize the C-Stick as opposed to touchscreen. What do you guys think?"
I hope they don't do it as ports, because that could be patched. So if you already own the game, you don't have to buy it again. You know, I would like to think Nintendo would be fair to the people who've already supported their system. And
I mean, it depends. If they did a lot
not above them to, you know, go ahead and it's not below them.
3DS Classics Collection.
If they did a lot of stuff to it, then maybe. But I would think they'd be more inclined just to make another one.
Yeah, I feel like the playing Kid Icarus with. I don't know, with a second stick would be a little bit different. Like, it's not, I don't think it's something that you could comfortably just patch in or just, you know, do in a port. I think that you would have to rework the way that the combat in that game works a little bit.
It doesn't work, so that's not a problem.
I mean, how comfortable is that C-stick anyways?
Well, there's that, but
we don't know its fidelity either, so there's questions there.
Right, but mm-hmm. the way that you use the touch screen, like you kind of swipe to spin a, you know, the way that you would spin a globe, except that here you spin the camera and then you tap again to stop it. It's not like one-to-one transferable to a C-stick.
I agree. I think it's much worse, but I also agree that it's not directly compatible and that they would have to essentially redesign the controls and sort of reprogram them for... you know, all the things that go with using a joystick, the dead zones and the turn rates and acceleration and deceleration. And
right.
All that
and possibly also some of the challenges in the game. I mean, you wouldn't be approaching them the same way.
That's true. But that game has so many problems that are bigger than that in terms of
the biggest challenges in the game are the game.
I mean, half of that game and half the reason I don't like that game is because enemies will just straight up walk behind you and attack you and you can't see them. And you don't even know that you're being attacked. Because
spin that globe, Johnny.
Yeah, this game I don't like, and I'm totally with James on it. So I don't think this game would be the best case, but I think there might be other 3DS games that would benefit from this. And you know, we already heard that Smash Brothers may or will support the second joystick on the new 3DS. Even though it won't support Circle Pad Pro for some reason,
because Sakurai.
That's odd, but the idea that, you know, And of course, this thing has amiibo support built into it. We didn't talk about that because I think it's lame, but it does have the built-in amiibo support. And so
That's smart. I think as opposed to selling the dumb docking station thing, they're going to say,
I think amiibo is lame. I think including the feature in the system is smart. Yeah.
But they sold out of pre-orders on Amazon for the thing. So what the fuck do we know?
Of course.
What do we know?
I mean, we're just,
they're not for me, clearly.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, I think it makes a lot of sense that Smash Brothers would support this new hardware because it's already going to be supporting Amiibo, right? So they should be thinking about that. And of course, Sakurai is such a, you know, he's such a gimmick whore for all the various systems that he puts his games out on that it makes sense that he would want to get involved in that, right away. I mean, I don't think Smash Brothers particularly benefits from having all those extra buttons.
I mean, they just use it for Smash Sticks probably. It's like this on the GameCube. I mean, to me, where I see the potential here are games like Fire Emblem Awakening that had DLC. Maybe they just put out like a download only version that this has, maybe they do some minor upgrade things, but ultimately it's just, and here's all the DLC with it. You can buy it this way. Have fun.
Right. You don't really need the enhancements of the new 3DS for that. And that's the thing that, the thing about Nintendo's 3DS games is that they've been designed for the 3DS, so they kind of they did know that the thing didn't have a second C-stick, so the games don't need one. So I have a really tough time imagining Super Mario 3D Land, you know, with a control stick for the camera, because that game was designed to be kind of a hybrid of a side-scrolling and 3D Mario.
Yeah, I mean, Monster Hunter is one of the only games that would really benefit from it.
Right.
Which it would, because Monster Hunter said, fuck the controls, we're going to do what we want.
Well, yeah. And I mean, that's huge, because Monster Hunter is huge, but I mean...
And that's why the first time we saw third parties using it was in a stream by Capcom showing off Monster Hunter.
Yeah.
Because they can do what they want.
Of course, no one's mentioned Resident Evil, but even though that game supports the Circle Pad Pro.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm
that was kind of the big rollout for the Pro.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about Revelations 2 was that they didn't announce it for any Nintendo platform.
But maybe it'll come out on the new 3DS. You know, that might be kind of a big get for Nintendo.
Maybe.
So that'd be interesting. Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I think I agree with you, Guillaume, that, you know, a lot of the existing 3DS games don't really seem like they would benefit that much from these new control inputs. And so, and certainly from the extra processing, you're probably not going to be able to patch in something that takes advantage of that. So then it makes you wonder, well, while we're waiting for them to make new 3DS games that do take advantage of that stuff, I think that's what kind of opens up the floodgates for stuff like Virtual Console and, you know, ports from GameCube and whatnot. And maybe those indie games that all, you know, think about how many freaking indie games are out on Steam that are, you know, that are made for controllers, but aren't necessarily really processor intensive. Stuff like Proteus, you know, just to pick one at random. That game might run on the new 3DS and you couldn't really do it very well on the current one. So, you know, there's stuff like that where maybe Nintendo's thinking, we just, you know, give people more options. You don't have to use all of it, but maybe this helps us get more games on the system, which has clearly been a problem, you know, and continues to be. So anything they can do to sort of open up the access and make it less intimidating for small companies and big companies to release games on the system is a good thing, and maybe this will serve that purpose.
You could say this is sort of a reaction to the fact that Western developers have more or less abandoned to making handheld games.
Yeah.
That there's
or that they're porting their Steam games to Vita.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's a great way to get Western developers.
But even then, those are like the big Western publishers are just out of the handheld game altogether. They're done. So
yeah, but you don't need publishers to put games out.
I get that, but they do make a lot of games, and historically they have put a lot of games onto handhelds, and they are not doing that anymore.
Yeah, I don't know about a lot. I mean, the Western output on...
THQ was putting out like a Game Boy Advance game every day.
There also used to be EA Sports games on handhelds. Those were the days.
Well, I hate to tell you, James, THQ ain't coming back.
I understand that. This is the. I'm not saying they're trying to lure them back in. I'm saying this is an opportunity for them to get Western developed games from another source.
Yes, from indies. Yes. Certainly.
Activision ain't going to go back to the days of making the Game Boy Advance Call of Duty version.
Nope. No more Spiderwick Chronicles. Sorry, guys.
On that note, John, why don't you read the final email this week?
Okay. The Delaney from Las Vegas writes, "It's surprising to think that Ubisoft would even pull away from the Wii U and stop all releases on it."
No, it's not.
"They even have projects done, supposedly, but aren't releasing them. Wii U has started to pick up and sell much, much better, and it's gone up 600%+ in sales over the past few months, but this statement came out after the sales boost. Do you think that Ubisoft will ever come back to Nintendo this console cycle? Could this be one of the last straws for the third-party support for Wii U? P.S. James, you always wanted this to happen. I think you somehow caused this."
I want a lot of things to happen to Ubisoft. I mean, a lot of things. And Ubisoft is still, for whatever goddamn reason, putting out, like, Pets games on the eShop. So what do I know?
And they're still putting out Watch Dogs on Wii U. For
that's right. Yep, that game coming, that we baby. Were pretty sure didn't
in
exist.
November.
Nice.
God. Yeah, they said it would never happen.
Yeah.
We said it would never happen. And maybe it still won't. It's not November yet.
Yeah.
So that announcement came out this week, and I thought of this email, and I thought of a lot of things about Ubisoft, and
none of them positive. I
wonder who is that for? Like, why would anyone care about why? Even if you buy a new Wii U, are you really interested in Watch Dogs on it?
I mean, especially after that game came out, and people are kind of like, eh.
Well, once again, this is like Mass Effect coming to Wii U, right? No one cares because you can get it elsewhere. I mean, I've seen Watch Dogs.
People do like Mass Effect.
But the thing is, though,
generally don't seem to like Watch Dogs very much.
It sold a fuck ton of copies. I mean,
it sold 4 million copies. Front load sold them all. People were like, and then people got.
Yeah, the word of mouth is brutal. So
yeah,
this is like bringing the Scorpion King back for an encore in theaters 3 months
but
later.
But I mean, still, you can it's get it much cheaper. Well. You can get it much cheaper on Xbox One or PS4 if you really want it.
Yeah,
I've seen it for like $40, $30 or something like that.
And so it's for current Wii U owners then? Who don't have another console?
I guess. Who did
like the people who bought Lego undercover?
All five
who didn't
of them.
Hear about the world who didn't hear the word of mouth on this game. I mean, ultimately, speaking of Westerners putting out Planet of the Apes movie, the Tim Burton one, there's a GBA game from Ubisoft. Thank you, Ubisoft.
Oh wow!
That's the quality we're missing right now without Ubisoft.
And then they did King Kong like 2 years later.
Oh, it's bad. there's a DS version of that King Kong game too. But anyway, first off, Ubisoft made that comment around E3 that we have games that for the Wii U that are done. We just don't want to release them right now because there's no market. I doubt those games are done. They may be games that were deep in development that they killed. Or they didn't kill, they just shelved everything. And that's
maybe they never bothered to QA.
Right, and that happens. I mean, their games get made and then get shut down late in development cycle. That's not super unusual.
Yep.
I've played Pennant Chase Baseball, have you?
No.
For the GameCube.
I mean, it's entirely plausible.
Nintendo first party baseball game.
I mean, it's entirely plausible Ubisoft's just saying this stuff as a negotiating strategy with Nintendo. Hey, we want a lower rate for you to put our game out. And we'll release these games. They're not done yet, but we'll say they're done. Your fans go, well, why aren't we getting these games that are done?
Because there's probably a marketing plan around it that they don't want to spend money on. That's
Ubisoft
why.
Ubisoft is a business.
It's not a great business,
but it's a business.
Yeah, I mean, it's ultimately cheaper for them to put that game on the shelf and never release it than to actually put all the money into marketing it and putting it out on shelves and all that kind of stuff.
I mean, you could make the argument they could just dump it into the eShop and then just not really market it. I mean, if you've already made the investment, at what point does just dumping it at the eShop and going, oh, whatever happens, happens?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I'm sure there comes a point where they said, do we want to put any more money into this at all? Nope.
Right.
Bye.
I mean,
if the game was done,
yeah, they could just dump it into the eShop and go, whatever.
Right. I don't think there's literally a ROM sitting on someone's hard drive that's totally playable and runs perfectly. So.
Right.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, whatever that game is that Yves Guillemot was mentioning at E3, I bet you it comes out this year. They may not put a whole lot of fanfare about it, but what he wants to happen, if he's telling the truth and there is a game that's finished, it's probably something, by the way, that none of us would want to play. It's probably something like
probably
super
Raving
casual
Rabbids.
And
no, yeah, that became Kinect fodder. Now,
yeah, Raving Rabbids actually might be on the more interesting scale of what I would expect out of this. But
it's fucking ponies.
Yeah, whatever
it's not
it is,
ponies. It's fucking comma ponies.
What he wants to happen are two things. He wants the he wants the right timing, and Christmas is the right timing. If you're going to throw something out there with virtually no marketing, Black Friday is the day that it needs to be on the shelf. And yes. So that is my prediction. And number two, they want to see that, yes, Wii U sales are getting better and that they're going to meet some kind of minimal threshold for their, you know, their marketing research. And Wii U has done – it's turned around enough this summer that it will probably hit whatever target they had. So and I think – Nintendo expects to sell a fair number of Wii U's this holiday season, certainly more than last year. They couldn't do much worse than last year, but I think they'll actually do quite a bit better this holiday season. Everything points to that. And so Ubisoft is like, well, you know, maybe that's the time. And I bet you they'll just dump something. I bet they'll very little fanfare, very little advance warning, but something will come out and it'll be like, oh, okay. You know, and maybe it's like Valiant Hearts or something. Maybe it's not even like a not even like a retail game, but maybe just something like that, that, you know, they could, with minimal effort, they could port that to Wii U, but they just don't see why.
I think the question is, do they continue to put UbiArt games out? Because in the UbiArt development suite, making the port, making the, you know, the Wii U specific port is fairly minimal effort in terms
of. And yet, supposedly, Valiant Hearts hasn't come out on the Wii U.
Right.
Well, like I said, maybe that's the one. Maybe that's the secret complete game or virtually complete game, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it may be that – or maybe they just get selective on which ones they put it. Maybe they said Valiant Hearts doesn't really suit for the system's market where we see it. So, you know, maybe game about World War One wasn't where we think this system is. Maybe it's, you know, maybe it's games that are on the more lighthearted side.
Maybe it's Child of Light 2, which yeah. will probably happen.
Right. So maybe they just more select about which ones they check the Wii U port box on the mm-hmm. UbiArt dev console and hit submit. I mean, but yeah, don't read too much into what Ubisoft says, because they're a bunch of fucking liars, generally speaking. So yeah, I mean, Ubisoft's words should carry very little value to you as a person.
Oh boy, James, I don't. What did they do to you in your childhood?
It's not even in my childhood.
What game did your parents buy
actually,
you?
Actually, no. Made by Ubisoft, no, because Ubisoft didn't really do that many games at that point.
An adult can hate this much, Johnny.
It was the yet another port of Rayman 2 for DS or 3DS? Is
no, that actually happened later. That was
Rayman
the,
3D? That was 3D?
Assassin's Creed 14?
Rayman 3D is the fourth tier port of Rayman 2.
The funny thing is, actually, Ubisoft every year releases one or two games that I really like, and they release a whole bunch that I think are just horrifying and garbage, but they're not a publisher I can ever write off, and I think as much as you like to make fun of them, as much as sometimes we laugh at the games that they do release on Nintendo platforms, it would be a loss if they really do go away for good.
Absolutely.
For Nintendo, it would be devastating because they're damn near the only game in town when it comes to third-party support for consoles. So they really need to hang on to a company like Ubisoft. I mean, if Nintendo loses them for good, and I don't think they will, but if they do, throw in the towel, guys, on third-party support. You don't even have token support anymore. Yeah. You know, that you're a complete joke. Everyone's laughing at you. If you can't even keep Ubisoft, I mean, that's pathetic. That's like a whore turning down your $200, you know? I mean, what is wrong with you?
Wow.
Get your shit together, buddy.
To me.
Find a hairbrush.
A French whore, no less.
Take a shower.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
The thing about Ubisoft is they just, I mean, what they say and what they mean is often inconsistent as a company. But the moment where it cracked for me was when they released a press release about how they were going to be announcing a ton of new games for Nintendo platforms that we're very excited about. And then that thing happened that I had to stay up for because fucking France. And it was a Wii game that we uploaded the images to the DS category because we thought it was a DS game.
Oh, wow.
And then somebody came through and said, guys, that's the Wii game. And well, fuck you. No, it's not. And sure enough. Yeah, it was.
The sad thing is Ubisoft released several really good Wii games, by the way. Their output is just incredibly wildly inconsistent.
Remember, they had eight Wii launch games, and every last one of them was terrible.
Yeah, but they also did like that Prince of Persia game, the Forgotten Sands, that's exclusive to Wii and is really good.
They also did Hawks 2 exclusive to Wii, which is really bad.
Well, there are a number of examples in either direction, we'll say. But
they are a vastly
Red Steel 2 is pretty good, by the way. So they definitely I'm ambivalent on Ubisoft, but I don't they're not boring, and I would hate to lose them as a point of discussion on this show.
They have such an incredible scope in what they are capable of that it feels
both good and bad.
I mean, they made arguably the most interesting and even arguably the best Wii U launch game in Zombie U, even better than anything Nintendo released. So yeah, I mean, I don't think that, but a lot of people do. You can't write them off ever. Well, I can't. You can, James.
I don't write them off. I just think that they're wildly inconsistent when they talk. And they are. I mean, they'll say things and then not fucking mean it.
No, they're wildly inconsistent when they develop, too.
Well, that's also true.
Let's cut it off there, guys. So thank you, everyone who wrote in this week and every week. And we hope you will continue to do that. The address, as always, is rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. And I don't know if we're going to end up doing listener mail directly on episode 400, so maybe we'll try to squeeze in some more next week before that craziness gets ramped up. So please do send in all your emails about all the crazy stuff that's going on, what games you're playing, we'll get back into it next time. One other thing to mention, a little plug for our sister podcast, NWR Connectivity. I am on the latest episode, or I guess by the time you hear this, it'll be the previous episode. I think that's 49 or 99. Anyway, with Danny Bivens talking about – well, I know they're recording an anniversary or a special today. So anyway, that podcast has been around for a long time. If you've never listened to it before, you should. And on a recent episode, Danny Bivens and I, host of the Famicast – and me, host of the Radio Free Nintendo podcast, appear on the Connectivity podcast to talk about Metroid Zero Mission. And that is the fun thing about Connectivity. It could be anyone could show up and talk about almost anything. And that's a good example. So if you like hearing me talk about Metroid, or if you'd like to hear what Danny thought about it for the first time, check that out. That game is currently out on the Japanese Wii U Virtual Console and is very likely coming to Europe and North America soon. So get caught up on Zero Mission, one of my favorite games of all time, and listen to the rest of Connectivity. So anyway, that's over at NintendoWorldReport.com and on iTunes, as is our podcast. We'll hope to see you there, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Later.
Bye.
Where are we seeing them?
On iTunes.
Aww.